Coming up on Tech News Today, Yahoo CEO Scott Thompson is sorry that you're mad at him. Also, Google self-driving cars get a license, road trip, and Comcast in trouble for packet inspections. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, May 8th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by ShareFile. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today, free for 30 days, plus get double storage. Here's how. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter our promo code TNT. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com, use offer code TNT, and they now offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm OMG Chad.
And joining us today from Mac Talk in Australia, Mr. Peter Wells. Welcome back to the show, Peter.
Why, thank you, Tom.
How is Wednesday?
Once again, it's absolutely stunning, so you should come down here.
We will all move to Sydney tomorrow.
Fantastic.
All right. Done. It's a deal. Let's start off with someone who may have to move soon, Scott Thompson, CEO of Yahoo. Yesterday afternoon, All Things D reported that Thompson had sent another memo to his staff apologizing that people are mad at him. He says,
I'm sorry that you got mad.
I'm sorry you got mad at me. Here's what he said in the memo. As I told you on Friday, the board is reviewing the issue and I will provide whatever they need from me. Of course, he's referring to the fact that he had a computer science degree listed on his profile, both in the SEC filing and on the Yahoo website, and he doesn't have a computer science degree. He continues, in the meantime, I want you to know how deeply I regret how this issue has affected the company and all of you. We have all been working very hard to move the company forward, and this has had the opposite effect. For that, I take full responsibility, and I want to apologize to you. Well, he did take full responsibility. That's good.
Well, he's taking full responsibility that the company has been affected by this terrible distraction. He has to say something.
Yeah, right. Thompson's bio snafu has apparently tossed one person out, Patty Hart, who is on the board for Yahoo. I remember we've mentioned her before because her resume said something about having an economics concentration or having a degree in economics, and her degree was actually
it was a fancier way of saying business administration.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I guess that's not good enough for anybody anymore.
Anyway, Patty Hart, according to All Things D, has decided not to seek re-election. She's not going to step down right away, it doesn't look like, but she will not seek re-election to the board at the next annual meeting. She was the Yahoo director in charge of the search that resulted in hiring Scott Thompson, so there's your fall person.
She is a bit of a fall person in this case, although she is a CEO of her own company, and she has a pretty good excuse for saying, you know, this whole thing has just gotten very messy, and I have a company to run, I'm going
to
go ahead and not be part of this board anymore.
You guys,
in a way, it's probably a relief to all involved.
That means there's a seat open at the board. Dan Loeb's not doing anything.
Right? Yeah.
He's like, wait, I can totally use that seat. You know, I have a chair just
he's
like that at home.
He's probably sitting in it right now, and they're like, Mr. Loeb,
he's measuring
not
it
actually your
yeah.
seat.
Yeah. The other thing, but what's Thompson's response, though? They've had days to get a good response out, and this is what they have for the public. They didn't say, like, yeah, the resume thing, mistake or not. It's just there's been so much time involved in this that it just seems like it's a weak response.
Peter, have you been following this in Australia?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of heartbreaking, and it's this kind of story that could only ever happen to Yahoo or possibly Brim. But I don't know. I think when a scandal like this happens, there's kind of the scandal itself, which wasn't too bad in this instance, and then the response. And like Ayaz was saying, the response just took too long. And the fact that there was that weird response yesterday of this is a personal vendetta, it seems to have been, it's the response to the scandal is where they've really kind of fallen down, I think. this time.
And Yahoo is conducting an investigation. He mentioned that in his note to the people. We mentioned that yesterday on TNT. So that investigation is proceeding apace, and we'll see what happens. Meanwhile, let's move on to some more entertaining news. Google got its license.
Yeah, in Nevada. Road trip. In Nevada.
Okay.
It's a great place for a road trip.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a really good place to test some driverless cars, except the drivers have to be in them. So the deal is that Google received its first official DMV license from the state of Nevada to start testing self-driving cars. Now, there was legislature passed in 2011 that allowed the first U.S. law basically permitting on-road testing for vehicles, but state laws require that not only is the person behind the wheel, but there's also a passenger in the passenger seat, in the front passenger seat during testing. And that's what we're talking about now. We're only in the testing phase. So Google has about 10 or so vehicles out there, 6 Toyota Priuses, an Audi TT, a Lexus RX 450H. So I guess it's kind of like midsize, a little sporty guy and more of an SUV out there just to give it a go. And just in case you think, how will I know which is the Google self-driving car besides that whole crazy thing on top of it, they're going to have a special license plate. So the license plates are going to have a red background instead of whatever the state would normally have. Obviously, we're talking about Nevada at this point. And we'll also feature a little infinity symbol on the left-hand side, which apparently, according to one DMV staff member, is supposed to represent the future. Because the future will never end, apparently.
Well, hopefully.
Well, if all goes well.
Very, very positive of that.
If all goes well, the future is infinity.
The Mayans are going to be wrong.
Yeah, so this is the situation. The DMV in Nevada says, without naming any other company specifically, that other companies have approached them with desire to also get their own self-driving licenses.
Intriguing.
So Google's not the only game in town. Yeah. They're the first.
And we've heard that other companies have had this under development. They're just not as public about it as Google. But essentially, I looked it up. Google is only 13 years old. They turned 14 in September. So this is why they have a learner's permit.
Very much so.
They have to have someone in the car with them when Google is driving its own car
right.
with its algorithm.
Yeah, we're not quite ready to just have that solo driver yet. And it's also, you had asked me an interesting question before we started the show. It's like, well, what about the test that we've heard about already?
Yeah, exactly. Because this says you can test the car. It's not saying anybody can get a license to drive a self-driving
car.
But Google has the right to go out on the roads and test the car. Does that mean when Google took their self-driving car for a test in San Francisco that they were just breaking the law?
No, it does not mean that. It means that they had a special permit for a test that was to take place from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. on this day, and this was the route.
I see.
And they got something signed off on
beforehand. Kind of like a parade permit. Like,
yes.
You're allowed to go out on the road since we know you're going to be there. We'll be on the lookout.
Right.
And okay.
Yes, and we're all aware of that. This is basically, we have this license, and as long as the two people who are in the car also have licenses, we don't have to tell you every time we take it around for a spin.
Right, which
go
would
between
be
Reno and
kind
Vegas
of a pain,
or wherever
and you're
they
like,
go.
Let's take it out for a test. Well, hold on, we have to get a permit.
Exactly.
This allows you to just go out on the road. If the cops pull you over, you can go, no, see, we have a license to not drive our car.
Exactly. The more we talk about this and the farther forward we get, and it's very exciting, I can't help but think, but people are such bad drivers, and the whole point of this is, especially in congested areas, the cars will slow down so they're at a certain amount of distance away from the car in front of them, but will be able to get through bottlenecks more easily because you don't have that human error of braking too hard or that sort of thing, you know, or rear-ending the next person. But people are bad drivers, and I can see, especially since there's actually not going to be a car driving itself, that people are always going to be overriding the stuff because they're not going to trust that the car is going to slow down and not hit that other car.
You have a point in the general populace, but these are theoretically trained testing operators in this car. It's not like just anyone off the street, right?
No,
so
I know.
These folks
we're talking
a little
about
more
a very
awareness.
Small fleet at
yeah.
this point.
How many in the fleet?
About 10 cars.
Okay.
It's going to be interesting to see how the human driving perception is able to adapt to this new technology.
That's the thing, is we won't find that out until it's finally issued to the public.
Right.
Till you can crowd test it.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen until a lot longer from now, I think.
Yes.
I'm just kind of curious what the other vehicles are going to be like on the road. When they see that red license plate with that Infiniti logo, they're going to be like trying to gawk at it. Will cops stop this thing and be like, hey, is that the Google car? Or will people start freaking out?
They're going to try to mess with it?
Well, like, yeah, I'm coming real close to you. You're going to slow down?
Let's see what it does if I cut it off.
Oh, that would be awful.
Because it's not the driver in the car I'm afraid of. It's everybody else who sees the red license plate. It's like, I want to play with that somehow. It's kind of like the student driver thing.
You know, they do a lot of gambling in Nevada. So it's that kind of mentality.
It'll be
let's play chicken with the self-driving car.
Just got real.
What are the odds?
All right. Let's move on to Nokia having some apps to get you over. CTIA is going on, so of course Nokia's going
to have Nokia's trying to differentiate itself. Now, some Windows Phone versions that will be exclusive to Lumia. They have a bunch of apps, and the Lumia will be the first one to get the Windows Phone version of several apps, including PGA Tour. 12 months, it'll have an exclusive. Groupon for 5 months. That's also going to have some augmented reality, so they'll be able to look around for deals near you. ESPN Hub, which will be exclusive to the Lumia until May 2013. An ESPN Fantasy Football app that's going to be exclusive on Lumia again in the fall. And Rovio, now they didn't explain exactly what they're making exclusively for the Nokia Lumia, but something is coming for the Nokia Lumia exclusively. Then a whole bunch of other Windows Phone apps are coming out. Rovio is going to come out with Angry Birds Space. EA is bringing its sports games like FIFA, Madden, Tiger Woods, all of Windows Phone, and PayPal, Time, Daily Beast, and Box. They're all coming. And then Nokia said, you know what? We have our own app called City Lens, an augmented reality app for Lumia. So then if you wanted to look around and see nearby locations and things, you can do that with City Lens.
Well, you just sort of like hold up your phone and see that there's a,
that's right,
a gap on the other side of the wall.
Instead of holding it down, you hold it up.
So is this like goggles and Yelp?
It's like goggles. It's like Yelp it. Monocle. It's, but it's,
or Monocle, sorry.
It works on the Lumia 710, 800, 900, but it's via the Nokia Beta Labs. So you have to get it through there. So this is Nokia's attempt to be different from every other Windows phone out there because they have some apps exclusive for a while and they also have their City Lens.
I want to get Peter's take on this because we're somewhat enthusiastic about the Lumia here in the United States, but other folks outside of the U.S. we've talked to have been less excited. What's the feeling in Australia about Nokia's Lumia line?
Well, the Lumia, I think it's only the 800 or the 900 so far has been released officially in this country. But, you know, Nokia have a lot of goodwill in this country. I mean, my first phone was a Nokia 3310, and I've loved them for ages. So, yeah, I kind of, I mean, and I also really like the Windows platform. I don't think it's there yet, but I think everyone wants the Windows platform to just kind of get a little bit more strength behind it, just so we've got a pretty interesting race in the mobile field.
I don't know how impressive this announcement really is. I mean, these apps that are exclusive in the Windows Phone marketplace to Nokia phones, but they are mostly apps that already exist. Groupon exists on iOS and Android. The PGA Tour exists on iOS. So a lot of these Windows Phone apps they're getting have been available in other platforms for a long time. Daily Beast, PayPal, Box. I mean, these are things that I'm like, yeah, Windows Phone should definitely have these apps. Now, I know that's been the knock on Windows Phone is they don't have all the apps, and the more apps they get, the better it is. But I'm not seeing anything here that says, wow, Windows Phone is moving ahead. Maybe I'm being too harsh on it. Maybe Windows Phone is still, you know, it's still playing catch up because it started later than the other operating system.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that you can look at sheer numbers, and obviously iOS, the app store gets a lot of apps there, and so does Android. But the thing is, to bring it up to parity with these top name apps, because that's the question, do you have this app? If the answer is no, that's going to be a knock on Windows Phone in general. On top of that, Nokia was basically saying, look, these aren't just going to be ports. You're going to see a lot more tiles and hubs. You're going to be able to see the content differently than you would on the Android version. It's going to be different than the iOS version. So it's like Nokia is saying, look, we're really behind Windows Phone, and we're going to get these deals if we can to make sure that there are applications when people want to use them.
Yeah, I think the most important announcement here kind of gets buried, and that's that Rovio is building a dedicated development team to create titles. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that, but I think that is the most significant, is a big company like that saying, this platform's worth building for,
right,
so we're not just going to port it anymore.
There have been stories of Microsoft incentivizing by offering third-party services, but Rovio doing in-house, that's a big deal.
Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor for Tech News Today, ShareFile from Citrix. In business today, it's important everything runs efficiently, and that includes sending large files, whether they're big documents. I mean, you may think, oh, documents, they're not that big. Legal documents, those can be huge. They can be a lot bigger than you expect. PowerPoint presentations, not to mention videos and graphic files. large or confidential documents and presentations need to get to your clients immediately. And you want to be able to collaborate on files with colleagues and business partners easily and securely. So just sticking them up on some server and having them download is not good enough for business today. You want to work effectively away from your office. You want to be able to access files from any computer or mobile device anytime. That's why we highly recommend ShareFile by Citrix. ShareFile is a secure file sharing solution built specifically for business. It's a powerful tool that helps your business run smoothly. You can send files of almost any size without the frustration or bounce backs. You can collaborate on those files securely in a professional manner, completely under your control. And ShareFile is the perfect solution to doing business today in today's digital world. We've used ShareFile to send files to clients. And the thing is, you're not just sending them some link to some weird service that's got a weird name and doesn't have the kind of end-to-end encryption that you need. ShareFile is built by Citrix, so it has that security. You got to try it out. We have an amazing risk-free offer for our listeners at Tech News Today, a 30-day free trial plus double storage. If you want more space, you got it. In order to get this special offer, visit ShareFile.com, click on the radio microphone, and enter our promo code TNT. Remember, visit ShareFile.com and type in TNT. And we thank ShareFile for their support of Tech News Today. On to T-Mobile, Passpoint, and Wi-Fi access. Another CTIA announcement here. The Wi-Fi Alliance has been coordinating development of Passpoint, which is based on the Hotspot 2.0 spec. And essentially what's going on here is that they will allow you to automatically log into Wi-Fi access points without having to put in a password. You don't have to sit there and wait for it to pop up and then click it and then type in some long
password.
So this
isn't just because your device or your phone has remembered a Wi-Fi password that you've already gone through.
Correct.
This will never have to happen. I love it already.
Uses your SIM card to authenticate.
Neat.
Now, T-Mobile has said they're going to do this. AT&T and Verizon haven't committed, but they are part of the Wi-Fi Alliance. Sprint is not part of the Wi-Fi Alliance, but they say they're looking at things. But T-Mobile is farthest along. And the way it would work is if T-Mobile has a hotspot, which they have a bunch of hotspots, and you have a T-Mobile phone that has the Passpoint enabled on it, you would just walk in and it would automatically log into the Wi-Fi for you. Now, you can turn it off if you're like, well, I don't want it to do that. Well, you can turn that off. But if you have it on, it will just do it without you having to worry about it. This offloads a lot of data onto Wi-Fi networks. So it takes the pressure off 3G and LTE and HSPA Plus networks. And it's a software upgrade, not a hardware requirement. So the hardware that's out there could be upgraded with an operating system upgrade to be able to take advantage of this.
Now, T-Mobile's flirted with this kind of idea before. They had something called, I think, Hotspot at Home. Remember this? You'd buy this little device for your house, and it only worked with like two or three phones. But when you wanted, when you were home,
that was for voice calls. This is for data.
Right. What I'm saying is, like, they were doing this. They were experimenting with how to deal with their network in general. The fact that they're doing this, I think, is
actually a better example. I think is AT&T, which has been doing this proprietarily on their own network for a long time.
Yeah.
In other words, if you have an AT&T phone and you run into an AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot, it automatically logs you on. But the advantage to Passpoint over that is that Passpoint could work across networks.
Mm-hmm.
So if AT&T and T-Mobile agree to allow it to happen, maybe through a little charge for Passpoint service, then your AT&T phone could automatically log on to a T-Mobile Wi-Fi hotspot.
Well, and with networks so clogged, this just makes sense, especially if they can get a few more dollars from all of us for saying, well, it's so convenient to have Passpoint turned on, the switch turned on. And then all of that time that I'm within a Passpoint area, and of course they could, you know, add some towers, I guess, some Wi-Fi extra hotspots in public areas, then it frees up their data networks.
I like that T-Mobile's willing to try. I mean, T-Mobile's going to die. They're not going to be able to handle anything, but they're willing to try out new technologies to make their experience better. Because if you have that handoff working, you might have improved coverage areas. You don't even know why. You're like, oh, it just works. That's what you want. You don't want the customer to go, okay, drop down menu, and then this thing, and then this thing, and then sometimes you type something wrong. Forget that. I mean, this is the way the stuff should work. It should be able to roam from network to network and never know what's going on behind it.
I think the only thing that sounds confusing is when you don't have an unlimited data plan, right? And you don't necessarily know when things are switching back and forth, and you want to make sure that it's all fair and square at the end of the month. I know that they have to figure that out, but at this point,
Well, you'd have to look at your phone. It's not an ideal, but yeah, right. You'd have to be like, am I on the Wi-Fi? Oh, I'm on the Wi-Fi. Okay,
yeah, I guess I can launch Netflix. Or at least maybe that would be represented now in your bill or something.
Like a little lightning bolt. So use as much as you want.
I'm on Passpoint.
Yeah, but you would be able to tell, like, oh, I'm on the Wi-Fi now. I mean, sure. Your Wi-Fi icon would still come up.
Right.
It would just do it automatically without you knowing it.
Right.
So on the opposite side of that is when you're streaming Netflix and walking around, you want to keep an eye on it.
Sure,
when it seamlessly turns off the Wi-Fi, yeah, and you're suddenly on your data network. That is a very good point. Peter, what do you think of this? I mean, I don't know what networks in Australia might be willing to hop on board with this, but do you like the idea and concept?
No, I love it. I love it. I mean, I just think the more you get to I'm sure it's the same in America, where there are certain locations that are just so overcrowded on the towers. Anything that could help that out would be fantastic. So, yeah, I'd love this.
Jack Gold, an analyst at J. Gold Associates, I'm assuming that's Jack Gold Associates, told Computer World he thinks it's pretty much a dream. It's unlikely there will be universal networks that you can roam against. There are probably no phones out there right now that do this, although a software upgrade makes it pretty easy. He says, I don't think it can happen quickly. However, you got the opposite from Wi-Fi Alliance CEO Edgar Figueroa. Obviously, he's going to support it. He told Ars Technica he would not be surprised to see Passpoint-enabled Wi-Fi networks available to consumers by the third quarter of this year. Because it's so easy to upgrade. The question is, will AT&T be willing to play in the Passpoint world where people would be using the T-Mobile Wi-Fi instead of the AT&T Wi-Fi? Or are they just going to want to keep you in there? I'll be honest. I've had that AT&T Wi-Fi turn on, and all of a sudden my data connection goes away because the Wi-Fi access point is crap.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it's probably whatever's cheapest AT&T will think is the best idea. It's not so much playing well with others.
Yeah, I think they're probably trying to determine that, which is why they've got such a standoffish, like, yeah, we're part of the Wi-Fi Alliance, but
whoever's actually deploying the network, I mean, it's in their best interest to wholesale that out, too, because, I mean, if they can, again, create revenue streams, because if Verizon ends up paying AT&T because their Wi-Fi hotspots are good, like, that's what they want anyway.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I mean, this could build up a whole secondary market of networking that isn't what we normally see either.
Brief side note, Ars Technica points out a new revision of IEEE's 802.11 standard was released today. The revision proposal called 802.11.2012. We're used to the letters, but I guess they got all Mayan on this one. It was announced yesterday. It supports faster devices, faster networks, as well as better handoff between cellular and Wi-Fi networks. So it'd help out with Passpoint. On to FCC Chairman Jenikowski and the CTOs of AT&T and Verizon flapping their gums about all kinds of related stuff. FCC Chairman Jenikowski gave a keynote address at CTIA in New Orleans and pretty much said, look, AT&T's telling people that the recent price hikes are because they weren't allowed to buy T-Mobile. That's just not true. Competition leads to lower prices. AT&T, of course, didn't agree. They responded. Jim Ciccone, Senior Executive Vice President of External and Legislative Affairs, says, look, the FCC was within their rights to withhold their approval, but it is incorrect to deny that that has an impact on the prices. Basic economics and the law of supply and demand apply to the wireless industry. In the case of wireless without additional capacity, which would have been created by our transaction, prices rise. Well, additional capacity for AT&T, but less competition. So it depends on where you stand there. Everybody acknowledges they need more spectrum, though. Jenikowski said the kinds of challenges we have in mobile are the kind we want, challenges stemming from mobile demand. Related to managing that spectrum, let me throw out a couple of proposals here. Verizon CTO Tony Malone supported the idea of toll-free access to customers. He said, as we move away from flat-rate pricing, there is room for a 1-800 type of service where certain destinations could offset the cost of the network to get customers to those destinations. There are net neutrality issues that have to be addressed, too. You think? I mean, to translate what he said is, now that we've started charging people by the gigabyte instead of having unlimited data plans, we can now charge Netflix to not count against your data plan. Cool with that?
I could definitely see that being a point for people going.
A Netflix customer would love it.
Like, oh, great. I don't have to pay for this service, but it's going to suck because you could be shut out on other networks.
Well, a Netflix customer would love it if Netflix pays. What if Netflix doesn't pay, but Hulu does? And all of a sudden, Netflix is crappy on your phone, or you're not, or Netflix is at a competitive disadvantage.
Right. You'd have to.
Or Verizon's own service suddenly shows up on your phone and doesn't count against your bandwidth cap.
Wasn't that VCast? That was kind of true for a little bit, I thought.
Actually, Verizon is working on a Netflix competitor. Mm-hmm. Remember that.
Are they StreamPix or is that somebody else?
I don't remember what the name of it is. Peter, what do you think?
Yeah, that sounds right.
We discussed this last time I was on, that it's always really hard when you don't want that bill shock at the end of the month when you've suddenly downloaded a lot of stuff on your mobile data. But clearly, you know, you really need to be, I'm so worried about even commenting on this because I just don't want to end up in a situation like you're talking about where I have to choose my ISP based on what streaming services I want. Obviously, that's the worst situation you could have.
But that's what they want. They want to be.
I know that's what they want.
They want to compete on that. Likewise, AT&T CTO John Donovan, I thought, said something that was very enlightening on why technology doesn't get rolled out faster. We have faster capacity than even LTE available, but nobody's rolled it out yet. He says, look, if you're late to the market, customers will punish you and they'll go elsewhere. But if you go too early, shareholders penalize you because you aren't using the network you rolled out. The hardest task is not selecting the technology, but picking the window of time to deploy it.
So AT&T is saying that if they didn't have to worry about shareholders or customers, they'd be completely fine.
That's right.
It's like, forget everybody. We're just going to be like, okay, that's happening Tuesday.
I think they're explaining why they're behind in rolling out LTE. They're trying to say, look, we're in the perfect position. The shareholders aren't mad because we haven't rolled out a bunch of infrastructure we're not using. But at the same time, customers haven't got too much of an option. I mean, they can go to Verizon, but Verizon LTE isn't everywhere yet. So we're trying to pick the perfect time.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really buy this argument. I understand that in a very short-term situation, as a shareholder, you might say, gee, Verizon, it sure would be nice if more people already had LTE phones because you build off this infrastructure that you're not using at maximum capacity. But it will happen.
Well, but Verizon faced exactly that from their shareholders, which is why they stopped rolling out Fios. The shareholders were like, why are you spending all this money running out infrastructure? There's no one on your heels competition-wise for other people to flee to, and you're not selling it at capacity yet. Yeah, eventually you will, but shareholders have a very quarterly look.
Okay, but when you're talking about the case of AT&T, it is a different situation than Verizon and Fios.
Yeah,
because they are already in catch-up mode.
For LTE, well, sort of, yeah. I mean, they're behind Verizon, but I think what John Donovan is trying to say is they're exactly where the shareholders are comfortable with, which is like, okay, you're rolling it out, you aren't too far ahead of the game, so you're justified in spending the money. And Verizon's in good position with the shareholders because they're like, oh, well, AT&T's rolling it out, so you're not too far ahead spending a lot of money. This is not the right system if the system says, don't innovate too fast, don't give people too many good things. Because that's not a good idea. Finally, Senator Al Franken is sending another letter to the Department of Justice and the FCC, asking them to investigate whether Comcast has violated the conditions of approval of its merger with NBC Universal. Comcast, as you recall, exempts the Xbox 360's Xfinity On Demand app from the Comcast Internet data cap. Now, they defend this, saying, well, it's just like video coming in to cable television. It's just going to the Xbox instead. Well, Franken also brought up Sony's recent statement saying that they're not going to start a video service because they're worried about Comcast's 250 gigabyte bandwidth cap. And they say if they were to start a video service with all their Sony content, Comcast customers couldn't use it because they have a bandwidth cap. I know Australia's familiar with the concept of restrictive bandwidth caps for sure. The whole question hinges on, is Comcast actively prioritizing its own content? And Dan Rayburn at the Streaming Media Blog talked with some folks who have examined the packets, and there's some evidence here. They compared packets from MLB streaming video, Hulu, Netflix, and the Xfinity On Demand app on Xbox. They found that MLB, Hulu, and Netflix packets were marked with something called CS1. CS1 is lowest priority or best effort service. As long as there's nothing else competing with it, you send that packet on through.
When you say marked, it just, that's a title. Some sort
Comcast
of title associated with it.
Has added this header to that, to those packets. They do originate from Level 3 or Akamai. Xfinity packets originate from Comcast servers, so they are coming from within the network. But they are marked CS5, which is maximum bandwidth assurance, which means all else fails, send this packet first. All traffic from the cable modem termination system to the home cable modem shares the same path. So whether you're from Hulu or you're from Xfinity, you're traveling along the same pipe on that last mile. Now, there's no evidence of how these tags are being used or even if they're being used. But Rayburn said on his post, if they are using them, I think you could then make a reasonable assertion that the spirit, if not the letter, of the Department of Justice statement is being broken by Comcast. And I talked to an expert in this. I said, look, is there a difference in these packets being delivered with a packet marker like that over the video that's sent to your cable box? And he said, look, yeah, your cable box video should be delivered over a different VLAN with a different bandwidth limit, not over the internet. And these packets are definitely being sent in the same stream with internet traffic. So they are, even though they're only on Comcast's cables, they are essentially on that last mile being sent over the internet.
I'm just trying to figure out what Comcast could do other than either eliminate the cap or count this against their own cap. I mean, there's really very little they could do to like spin their way out of this, right?
Well, what they've tried to say is,
well, they could stop prioritizing things.
Yeah, maybe they're not. They're just not counting it. They've only said they're not counting it against your bandwidth cap, but they've said that's because it's on our own network anyway. So it shouldn't count against your bandwidth.
I don't know if this story would resonate with me if I didn't see really bad periods of the day where my Netflix is just garbage, but I do on a regular basis, and I have Comcast. So when I hear stuff like this, it's like, okay, I don't want to be paranoid for no reason. But you start looking at things and you think, it kind of seems like I'm at the short end of the stick here. I'm getting stuff I'm getting the best effort scenario, and the effort isn't really that good.
Peter, do you have any thoughts on this from the other hemisphere?
It's just fascinating to watch because, you know, we're starting to lose our bandwidth caps and those kind of things after fighting for so long. So to see you guys start adopting all of this is really fascinating to watch. I do feel sorry for you. That's all I can say.
Everything's always the opposite. That. See, it's the kind, because you're in Australia, you have to lose your bandwidth caps and we have to add them. We can't. Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah. For the world in balance. Yeah.
It's the equatorial law.
Right, yeah. Exactly. All right, let's move on to the news views. Oracle and Google's patent fight has begun in the second phase of their ongoing trial. In opening statements, Oracle's lawyer said that Android's Dalvik virtual machine infringes two patents that originated at Sun but are now owned by Oracle, U.S. patents number 6061520 and RE38104, if you're keeping track.
My favorites.
In response, Google said the patents have nothing to do with smartphones since they were applied for in the 1990s before phones were smart. And Google engineer Tim Lindholm and two Oracle engineers took the stand to give testimony.
Sprint subsidiaries are getting their first WiMAX phones. Boost Mobile gets the HTC Evo Design 4G, while Virgin Mobile gets the HTC Evo V4G. Both of these phones are Sprint hand-me-downs and have similar specs, HD screens, 5-megapixel cameras, hotspot capabilities, and come with ice cream sandwich. A big differentiator between the two is that Evo V4G also has a glasses-free 3D screen and can take 3D pictures. They're both going to be available on May 31st at the price of $300.
You want to know the latest in RAM news, so here it is. Micron announced it has developed a fully functional DDR4 module and expects to market it later this year. Micron's DDR4 RAM uses 30-nanometer technology. Expect to see this in enterprise use before it trickles down to consumers.
AT&T Mobility CEO Ralph De La Vega told CNET that AT&T will offer a family data plan, which would allow you to pay for data once and use multiple devices. So not a family plan like multiple devices, multiple plans. De La Vega said that AT&T knows how the plan would be structured, but did not delve into details like timing or pricing.
Well, I certainly want to know a little bit more about that, because one data plan for everybody would be patent wars. Apple and Samsung slimmed down their patent cases against each other in their ongoing case in the United States District Court for the Northern District of California. This will keep the trial set for July 30th. In total, the companies have cut their claims by about half. So, moving in the right direction, I guess.
The FTC and MySpace have settled a privacy dispute. Now, MySpace will be subject to privacy audits for the next 20 years and will implement a privacy program. The dispute centered around MySpace disclosing the user data to advertisers without user permission. The FTC said that's a violation of federal law.
RIM announced it's picked two new executives. New COO is former exec VP of Sony Mobile Communications, Christian Ter. Frank Bulbin will be the new chief marketing officer, who previously worked at LightSquared, Vodafone, and Orange. The CMO position was vacant since March of last year.
T-Mobile CTO Neville Ray says it's been working to bring better support to iPhones by freeing up 1900 megahertz spectrum. The network should be ready by fourth quarter, which would allow T-Mobile to go after AT&T subscribers who are no longer under contract. Maybe that's you.
Twitter asked a New York State judge to throw out a court order requiring the microblogging service to turn over 3 months' worth of messages posted by an Occupy Wall Street protester being prosecuted for disorderly conduct. In a motion filed on Monday in New York City criminal court, Twitter lawyers argued the city's district attorney's office overstepped its authority in ordering the tweets and other subscriber info of Malcolm Harris.
Let's move on to the randomizer and randomize some stuff.
Randomizer.
Oh, sure. You got your CTIA going on in New Orleans. So that means the Las Vegas Convention Center is open for the lighting fair. The Light Fair Industry Conference is going on in Las Vegas. And you may say, well, that with a bunch of light bulbs, right? These are pretty exciting light bulbs. General Electric, Philips, and Sylvania all showcased their new LED light bulbs that can last more than 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
20 years.
Now, it'll cost you $60 for the Philips one, for instance.
That's totally worth 20 years.
But it only consumes 9.7 watts, too.
That's amazing.
And apparently, I didn't realize this was one of the issues with the LEDs. I know that the directional lighting has been an issue, but it was the cooling of this. And there's all kinds of technology to keep it cooler. Apparently, the GE version has like this weird system to get air in and take the heat out. It's these small leaps you're thinking of. 20 years, you've replaced your roof and your bulbs at the same time, I guess, every time you're worried about your house. That totally works for me.
Oh, my gosh,
and
yeah.
They're much cooler than every other light you could think of. So
does it make your house look like a 7-Eleven? You know, does it have that big white glow? Have they ever gotten to a nice incandescent light with
LED?
Yeah,
no, these actually are. I'm not going to say for sure because I haven't seen these in person, but from all reports, these have a very similar incandescent feel to them. They're not the harsh fluorescent light.
It's kind of like CFLs. When they first came out, they were like all green and everybody didn't like that, and then they moved towards that daylight color, so it has that familiar feel. That's where this is, the LED technology is getting. It's getting to that point where it's got to buy it just once. I mean the first I bristled at the price, like, but I'm only buying it once for 20 years.
It's $3
a year.
Still
not as warm as an incandescent bulb, but you know, for 20 years, 9.7
watts. I get a lampshade.
I'll deal with it.
All my fluorescents are in lampshades, then you can't tell the difference. You really can't.
All my party hats are lampshades. Let's take a break and thank our sponsor, Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. If you'd like to create a website right now, that is lampshadepartyhats.squarespace.com. Go do it. It's free, and it's so easy. All you do is you press the try it free button, you give it a little information, you set it up, you don't have to give them a credit card information, and you're on your way. I was editing the calendar section for Sword and Laser yesterday. Couldn't be easier to go in there and just throw in new stuff, press save. Updated immediately. You get all kinds of good analytics. You get the reliability of someone hosting a website for you, and you don't have to worry about it. Plus, special support available 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You're not going to get that from most other places. So check it out. You don't have to take our word for it. Go sign up. Start one right now. Free trial. Sign up for that free account. And then, if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code TNT and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Don't forget about free domain name registration if you pay for the annual plan, too. So get a free trial, free domain registration, and 10% off when you use the offer code TNT5. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. What's on the calendar today?
Tom, I'm glad you asked. 4J Studios is releasing the Xbox 360 edition of Minecraft tomorrow, May 9th. Exciting stuff. The Napster founders, the Seans, I don't know if they call themselves that, Sean Parker and Sean Fanning, they've been working on something in stealth mode called Airtime, and we are going to learn about what they're talking about finally.
Some sort of video.
June 5th. Yeah, there's been some hints, but nobody really knows. So June 5th is the day that we'll know more about that or thereabouts. And new iPads are coming to many new places in the world. May 11th, a bunch of countries, looks like mostly Latin America, South America, and and a few African countries as well on May 12th. Pretty much the Middle East, Bahrain, Egypt, Jordan, Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, UAE. iPads for all. New ones, too.
Hey, Eyes, what's that over there?
I think something
incoming!
Incoming message.
First email comes from Claudia, who says, hello, TNT crew. As an early adopter of Facebook, I chose it because of the privacy options. Now, listen closely. I live in Brazil. I was trying to escape Orkut. And the idea that anyone could see my profile just scared me. However, 95% of my Brazilian friends were just fine with Orkut's lack of privacy and used it all the time. In the last year, most of them moved to Facebook, many attracted by the social games. Facebook's new standard account is open, and I observed that all of the recent adopters have open accounts. When I mentioned they should look at their privacy settings, many do not even understand why it should not be open. Orkut is open. How will people find them if they change it? This might explain at least some of the users who never touch their privacy controls.
I'm seeing the email. I'm like, Orkut. Oh, this user's from Brazil. Okay, well, that makes more sense. But it's interesting to see people pick Facebook. And cause there's actually a lot of granular controls in Facebook that people don't look at because, well, they're really detailed. But this is an interesting viewpoint.
I thought it was fascinating that someone is like, yeah, this Google property is really not good with your privacy. So you want to move to Facebook.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's where Claudia started.
This is like the behavior of people on social networks, though. I mean, she says that a lot of her friends say, no. If I dial back any of my openness on Facebook, then people won't find me. And some people use Facebook that way, but many more are like, I don't even want to show up in any search at all. I want it to be hard to find me. That's how I'll keep my friend lists under control.
Peter, do you find that folks are cognizant of their privacy options on Facebook, or they just kind of throw caution to the wind?
Yeah, I see stuff on Facebook that I would never imagine people posting online. But I don't know. I mean, I kind of see Facebook for me. It's not something I use to kind of keep in touch with people in real life. Like, it's more of a Wikipedia for people I used to know. Like, when I want to find out what happened to that person in high school, that's when I use Facebook. I never actually hang out there.
What is John Goldsmith up to these days? What I use Facebook for, actually. So, yeah, keeping track of older friends that you might not be able to keep in touch with. I do that, too. All right, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. That is the place where you can suggest things for us to talk about on the show. We take a look at it each and every day, and we use it to determine our lineup. Thanks to everybody, especially the moderators, for contributing there. And thanks to you, Peter Wells, for joining us today. Let folks know where they can find Mac Talk and all the other stuff you do online.
Yeah, just follow me on Twitter is probably the easiest. So it's Full-Time Casual on Twitter.
Excellent. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say we're hosting a conference at the end of the month called One More Thing. Please go to onemorething.com.au. Tickets are almost sold out, so check that out as well.
Now, do you do a One More Thing at the end of the One More Thing conference?
It's up to the speakers, I guess. But, yeah, no, we've got the guys behind Tweety and Flipboard and a whole bunch of amazing iOS apps. So if you're into iOS development or design, God, I got a really good add-in there, then check it out. Yeah.
Excellent.
Sounds
all
good.
Right. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a phone message at 260-TNT-SHOW. That's it for us. Scott Johnson joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.